Episode 22, The Life-Changing Magic of a Shopping Ban.
Welcome to the Frugal Friends Podcast, where you'll learn to save money, embrace simplicity, and live a richer life. Here are your hosts, Jen and Jill.
Hello, friends. I am Jen.
And I'm Jill.
And we're so excited today to have my friend Kate Flanders on to talk about our Frugal Friends book club book, The Year of Less, and some other stuff that our listeners wanted to hear about. So before we get into that, let's get into our sponsors because we're trying something a little different because that's our prerogative. We can do that. So our first sponsor today is not an official sponsor, but also not a made up sponsor.
Whoa, new territory.
Right? So we are big fans of CookSmarts. It's a meal planning service and they provide 4 meals per week, the ingredients list, the recipe, and they have regular gluten-free, paleo, vegetarian versions. And they are actually doing a sale through September 26th for 20% off paid meal plans. But they always do 3 free meal plans for your first time. So I advocate doing your own meal plans traditionally, but this is my favorite service for seasons where I just can't. Like I don't have time to meal plan, like my Sundays are redonkulous. And so I've used CookSmarts in those seasons. And it's really helped. They have instructional videos for when there's like questionable things. Like I had a how to make wontons video for a wonton recipe and I would have never known. Like I would have had to Google it, but it was right there in the app. Yeah. So it's a fantastic service. They do like weekend prep I highly recommend. And who can say no to 3 free meal plans? You don't even have to sign up for the service to get those. But if you do, head to frugalfriendspodcast.com/CS, like CookSmarts. And if you make a purchase, you will help support the podcast. So again, non-official sponsor, but super helpful and on sale. And you can help the podcast if you pay. So love it. For no extra charge to you.
That's great. Also, in the spirit of minimalism, this podcast is sponsored by nothing. Literally nothing. We are sponsored by nothing. So buy nothing, spend nothing, have nothing. No, have something, keep the things you have, but don't spend it. Spend nothing, buy nothing, nothing. Try it out.
Oh gosh, we're 22 episodes in and our imaginations have ended. We're done.
Nothing. We've got nothing for you.
Well, beyond that, we had to bring on Kate so that we could have a podcast for you since our minds have quit working. So we hope that you enjoy our podcast with Kate Flanders. Kate, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I've been so excited for your book for so long that I knew when we decided to do a Frugal Friends book club, your book was how I wanted to set the tone. It was like a great introductory to how we want to do the book club. And I'm glad we did because there are so many people in our Facebook group saying your book like finally convinced them to pursue minimalism or they've like read or listened to it multiple times. So we are so honored to have you today.
Oh my gosh, thank you. And that is so sweet of you to say and just to share kind of what's been going on in the Facebook group. So thank you.
Yeah.
Kate, I also so appreciated reading your book. And one of the biggest reasons why I liked it relates to the difference between being vulnerable versus being exposed. And I feel like you navigated this really well, speaking both candidly about the realities of your experience with the no spend challenge, but also maintaining yourself in the process. So kudos and thank you because it was, quite revealing, but also you maintained your dignity in the midst of it, which it was refreshing.
Oh my gosh, that's like such amazing feedback. And I don't know if I've heard that exactly. People just say things like, You know, thank you for your vulnerability. Thank you for being raw and honest. But that's really cool feedback to hear, because I think it was important to me, not even just like my own dignity, but sort of keeping people's privacy a little bit. Like, I shared obviously little details of people in my life, but I didn't go too far deep because it just didn't feel like that was my story to tell. Mm-hmm. So thank you. Just thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's true.
Yeah. I loved that as well. And yeah, I think, I mean, your story and your book is so, I think what we're trying to, it's the type of vulnerability that we're trying to like cultivate in our community. And not just like vulnerability for vulnerability's sake. I can't take that. I can't say that 10 times fast, but like a real, I don't know. I just loved how you put it. And I'm so thankful to Hay House that they let you write the book the way that you did. Cause I felt like it was perfect.
Oh, I mean, you and me both on that one, because I honestly think the book wouldn't have happened if Hay House didn't say that. Mm. It was really interesting to sort of go through that whole process of pitching a book proposal and then hearing back from publishers, and every single one's feedback was either there are too many books about minimalism, which I don't necessarily disagree with, but sort of said there are too many books about it already. Or like, it's a good idea, but we would rather it be a how-to. And I'm like, I don't know how to write a book about how to not shop. Like, that would literally be one page. Yeah. Like, do not shop. Right. I don't know what else you're supposed to say. So, yeah. So, and Hay House was just like, no, yeah, you can write a memoir. I'm like, oh, really? Oh, okay. Thank you.
That's awesome. And you're such a great storyteller that, I mean, you're not the type of person publishing like posts about like 10 ways to do so-and-so or X things. I did something, something. Like, you are a storyteller. And so this really educates through story. And, yeah, well, I mean, we could give you like praise for an hour, but
yeah, let's not do
we
that.
Invited you to ask you some questions that, our community has, but then also questions that Jill and I have. So we will start with the questions Jill and I have. So I really am interested in how the second year of the shopping ban with, and then how your life has been since that.
Okay. So year two, it's funny. I actually decided to do it mostly because it didn't feel like it would be hard, because it already sort of had this, I don't know, like, it just felt like it was part of my life or part of the way that I lived. So I didn't need to change many rules or much. But one of the things I had regretted not doing during the first year was keeping track of everything that I did buy, because I got so many weird questions around what the shopping ban really meant. Like, so many people just heard those words, and trust me, now I like wish I had rebranded it or like was just better at branding, because I'm the worst. But they just heard those two words and assumed it was going to be this like incredibly restrictive thing that meant you couldn't buy anything ever again. Mm-hmm. And I bought stuff that year. It was really just learning how to only buy things when I needed them, rather than constantly like buying things ahead of time when you make that assumption of I'm going to need this one day, or I might need this one day. And so I still bought things. So I just thought, you know, maybe I'll do it for another year and I'll actually keep track of that stuff. And again, saying like it was not earth-shattering information by the end of it, but like, I knew the weirdest things, like how many sticks of deodorant I used that year, or tubes of toothpaste, or just like little things like that. And again, that's not super interesting, but I think with anything that, you know, with money, tracking spending, anything like that, like once you kind of know those numbers about yourself personally, it can help you or like stop you from making a lot of impulse purchases. Even just for like simple things like those examples, like if you were thinking of buying some deodorant because it's on sale, but if you already had, say, like 1.5 at home and you know you only use 5 a year, do you need it right in this minute? Mm-hmm. Like, probably not. And so it's such like silly things, but it was an interesting experiment for the second year. And nothing, I can't remember anything feeling really hard. And actually one thing sort of felt like an easy out, which like I never knew this was going to happen, but I've got this email from Penguin Random House in Canada saying that they wanted to like send me something or other. And then they basically just for a year added me to this list, I guess, of things they were sending out. So like, I think 3 times that year, I got these boxes full of free books, which was just like incredible. Like the note that they left was so nice, but being aww, like, we don't want, or like, it was really nice. Like kind of like, thank you for being an example of what it means to be like fiscally responsible or something, but like, we don't want you to not read books this year. it was really cute. But,
that's so funny.
So I did actually receive some books that year, but I didn't buy some. And then the other thing for year two, though, was I realized that I wanted to be able to support my friend's work. So sometimes that did mean, you know, if I had, over the past few years, especially have become friends with more and more people who are writing books. And so I'm like, I'm not going to not buy their book. Or I have friends who are amazing artists. And I'm like, if I can support even just buying one piece for like $30, I want to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And so little things like that just sort of changed the rules, became part of the rules for year two. And that kind of stuff is all still true today. I would say like, I'm still exactly the same. I don't think that I never shop, but I don't browse. I buy things when I need them. Mm-hmm. And that's just still very true to the point that it's almost to my detriment sometimes because I've not shopped or like not had that just habit of browsing and looking around for so long now that I get to this place where all of a sudden sometimes it does feel like, oh my gosh, like right now, a very specific example is I feel like the clothes I wear on a daily basis right now don't match who I am anymore. And I've never really thought about that because I don't actually care about clothes as like a trend thing, mm-hmm. but just realizing like, okay, you know, sometimes these things feel okay, but sometimes I just do feel like I'm a little more grown up now, or I am a little bit different and what I'm wearing right now doesn't match that anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I'm having these feelings of like, okay, I think it is time to like buy, even if it's just like 2 things, like buy 1 or 2 things that do feel more like me, who I am today. But I hate shopping so much that like, I don't even know how to do it.
I feel that too. Yeah. I'll wait until like all of my shoes are worn. And then I haven't been browsing and I just have to go and buy like what's out there because I need new shoes. Yeah, I totally. And I remember actually reading somewhere where you said you wish that you'd called the shopping ban a browsing ban. And I thought I loved that phrase.
Yes, because that is honestly what I have figured out more than anything. Like that year wasn't about not shopping. It was about not looking for more. And that's what browsing is. Mm-hmm. Like browsing, whether it is, you know, the online stores we visit, if you're walking through a mall or through a store, if you are flipping through magazines, scrolling through social media, following whatever kinds of accounts, like retailers and stuff like that, that is all browsing. And the biggest thing I changed that year was like always looking at like what else was out there. And I just learned how to just start just accepting what I had and realized that that was good enough and I didn't need more stuff. But now it is like, I'm like, I do need some things, or I just feel this, like I am different. It should be okay now to get a couple pieces of clothing that are for new me, like actual new me, not this perceived one I want to be, like actually who I am today.
Yeah.
And I don't really know how to shop for her. So. But I'll figure it out. It's such a first world problem, but I'll figure it out.
But I love that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Which, and we'll get to this later when we get to the questions from some of our listeners that they have for you. But I think that what you're describing does speak to that meaning making process and finding what matters in it. Like you said, it's not nothing earth shattering in it, but it often is those little things that become those aha moments for us. Like you're talking about deodorant, that's not earth shattering, but it is changing the trajectory of your life, your habits, you know, the things that are at the forefront of your mind, all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know when I don't buy deodorant, it definitely changes the directory of my short-term life for sure.
That's funny. Carrie and I have this running joke that we used to have on the podcast where before we recorded an episode, we'd be like, hey, have you put on deodorant yet today? So that's funny.
Yes. That's amazing. That's real support.
Yeah.
Kate, I'm curious. I know you were vulnerable in your book about some of the different things that this whole process brought up. Were you surprised by any of the peripheral issues or difficulties that the ban surfaced for you? Like, did you anticipate so much soul searching or emotional and mental growth through this?
Oh, I never thought it. And I mean, I think that's true of most little experiments that maybe we set for ourselves, is we think it's just going to be this little thing. I'm going to, you know, do yoga even just every second day for 30 days or little things like that. You just think it's going to kind of be whatever, a little challenge. And I mean, I think that in the first couple months, it didn't feel huge. I definitely realized I would be changing habits more than anything. But it wasn't really until sort of some bigger things started coming up. So in the book, I talk about going through a breakup, which was like, by all means, not the worst breakup I've ever gone through, but it was still one that hurt. And and then the hardest part, absolutely, that year was finding out that my parents were getting divorced, which just, like, as an adult child who didn't expect that, like, I mean, I think a lot of people whose parents get divorced, you do expect it, you see it coming. We did not. And so it was really hard for us to sort of understand and then realize you as an adult child have a lot to let go of as well in that. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I mean, I could obviously never have predicted either of those two things would happen that year. But yeah, I mean, I learned so much about myself and my tendency then when things are hard or feel hard, sad, rejected, whatever, guilt, shame, all kinds of things. Like, I never really realized that I had always tried to numb that, which I think is very human and very normal. And I also think is not something to be ashamed of because it is so normal. It was just something that year that I was like, I don't have any of the things anymore that I can really numb this out with. And so I think in not being able to numb out, I really started to see things. And then also came on the other side of it being like, okay, so like I actually felt really hard feelings and then I survived that. So that's possible too.
That was one of my favorite quotes from the book, was that I felt things and I kept living. And I think that this shopping ban opened you up to that realization. Like, you may have never known that about yourself. And like you say, we all have coping mechanisms. Some are just healthier than others, but to some degree, we need to learn how to cope with difficult circumstances. But I think for you, it seemed that it opened you up to this realization of the resilience that you had within yourself and allowing yourself to feel that and opening up to greater possibilities. So yeah, it was amazing to watch you through that process and to read through that process. But I think that that was a big realization for me too, is like, okay, like it's painful, but you can keep living in it. But life goes on in the midst of this too. Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, that's the hardest thing for people. Because we talk about like no spend challenges on this podcast, like trying to kind of gamify spending less. And you just like went cold turkey into it. And like all these things, I think one of the advantages I've always seen doing the short ones is that you don't have to feel like when things like this come up, you don't have to feel any like guilt or shame for not doing it perfectly. You kind of have an out, but like you went through the whole year and all of these things, like these things kept happening, and it just allowed you to like peel back the layers on anything that could have been an excuse for you, and just went through, and I just totally respect you for that. But then I think you're also the best person to ask, like, for people that want to do a shopping ban or like have a personality like me, like we're very, very all or nothing. So like shopping bans sound great to me, like no spend challenges. Like, what's your best advice for somebody that wants to do that?
I mean, I think that my first piece of advice is actually usually don't do one.
Got it.
But I say that though, because like the reason I started the shopping ban was because I had been tracking my spending for the first year of being debt free, and I wasn't happy with where my money was going. So every single month, at the end of the month, I would look at my numbers and be like, why did I think it was okay to spend the majority of my income this month? Like, why was that okay? And would kind of look at the numbers. I could see absolutely where it was going, and I could understand why in the moments I had justified everything. But yeah, I just wasn't actually happy with it. So I would always tell people, don't start with that. Like, any change that I have made, whether it was getting out of debt or doing the shopping ban, like, it came from tracking my numbers first. Like, the decision to do it came from tracking my numbers and just asking myself how I felt about it. So I would say start there, because I think we're so quick to think that we can just jump into something and maybe take it on. But those are the experiments. Like, if we have kind of no awareness of what was going on in the first place, it's really easy to fail and then feel awful about yourself because you failed. But the better thing is to, like, don't jump into the experiment. Start learning a bit about yourself first and then try and create an experiment that might work for you.
Yes, because, I mean, you got out of debt before you even started this. So you were familiar with what it felt like.
Yeah, oh my gosh. And to be honest, I mean, this stuff's always in hindsight, but like, it's not that surprising to me that the way that I paid off my debt, it was so aggressive. Like, I was so hard on myself, first of all. Like, the whole 2 years I was paying it off, I did not say very nice things to myself about the debt I'd gotten myself into. And so I was super hard on myself. I was very restrictive, like way more than the shopping ban was.
Wow.
I was really restrictive. But then the other thing that happened during the time I was paying off my debt was that I decided to stop drinking. And so the two things then, it's not that surprising to me that once I became debt-free, not only did I go back to spending, because it's sort of like a fad diet, and then at the end of it, you crash and you gain all your weight back. Like,
yeah.
So at the end of paying off my debt, it was sort of like I had burned out on being that, like, I don't know, frugal. We could call it frugal. Just, I was so hard on myself though.
Yeah.
So it's not that surprising that like I went back on it and was like, all right, time to spend again, because that sucked. And then that, because I didn't have drinking, then spending did become a thing. Like, it, and the other thing too that always pisses me off, I don't even want to be rude about it, but it just does, is so many interviews I do, and I know it wouldn't be with you guys, but so many interviews that I do, they make this stereotype that women are shopaholics. Mm. And so the interview questions I'll get are like, oh, did you consider yourself a shopaholic? And like, what did your shoe closet look like? And I kind of just want to freak out, not from me, but that like we continue to sort of just perpetuate that stereotype and say like, well, this must be what all women do.
Exactly.
So it had nothing to do with being a shopaholic. And also though, if you think you are one, that is not bad either. But I just think it was really about realizing that I had gone to spending, just kind of saying yes to whatever, because, and then numbing myself probably with some spending too, because that was at that time what I felt like I had as a coping mechanism. Yeah.
Overall, what do you think has stuck the most as you look back on this shopping ban? There's a lot of realizations that stood out to me from this realization of shopping being something that we bond over in our culture. You know, we bond over drinking just as much we bond over shopping. You're talking about spending and mindfulness and pairing the two, needing friends in the process that are going to encourage you and not tear you down, overcoming the different rationalizations that we can tell ourselves. Like, these are things that stood out to me, and I'm wondering, and there's far more, but I'm wondering what has stuck for you in how you approach your lifestyle now?
Well, based on that year alone, I do think overall, probably the most important one was learning how to do what was right for me, maybe not other people. Mm. And that's very hard. And it continues to this day and just constantly transforms or gets added to different areas of my life. I'm applying it to different areas of my life. Like, I just, it's not easy to do something that is countercultural, no matter how simple or big it is. But I think I've learned that when you do listen to yourself and do what is right for you, it will not only help you, but it can help some other people, even if it's not the people directly in your life. But I don't know, I think like it does model for other people that like it's okay to just trust your gut and do something different, even if it feels scary, because it's still scary. Like, no matter what it is, it's scary to do things that are different. Also, because you don't really feel like you have anyone to look at and go, can I do it this way? Like, is it going to work out at the end?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. So with that being said, have you gotten feedback? I mean, now that you have this platform of a book and then, you know, the readers from your blog, have you received feedback or exciting stories from others about the impact that you've had on them by modeling this?
Yeah. I mean, like, if I'm really honest, I still think to this day, one of the most meaningful emails I've gotten was that a woman in California emailed me and said that after reading the book, it finally clicked for her that she, like, why all the reasons she had tried to stop drinking before hadn't worked for her. Wow. And that she had been, sober since she read the book.
Wow.
And I think that was probably the most meaningful. So yes, I mean, I hear stories honestly almost every day at this point, like just a message on Instagram or something saying they're either inspired to start one, or they've, you know, since paid off maybe a few $1,000s of debt or something like that. And that's, it feels like incredible. That story from California, I remember I read it in a coffee shop and I bawled my eyes out. It came at one of those moments where, like, I don't know, like, this year's been really weird for me, I will say. And so I think it was just something that I needed to hear just keep doing it, keep doing this stuff, and it can help people. So
certainly, because in the midst, it's helpful to know that what you have done has created support for others and has provided an avenue for others to do what they want to do. And I think when I read your book, it stood out to me sometimes the ignorance that people can approach these things with, like, what, you're not shopping? Like, what? That's weird. Now I can't invite you to parties. Now I can't do this or do that. And so it did stand out to me that the necessity for friends in it. And that makes me happy because frugal friends. but it makes me wonder, has it helped you to break down areas of ignorance or approach your support of people in a different way? Because I know you even had said, there were probably times that I convinced my friends to come out drinking with me, not realizing what that could mean for them. Like, has this helped shift the way that you approach other people who are making decisions for their lives?
I mean, 1,000%. That year was huge. Like, in realizing that, and like, it was something I honestly don't even think I realized till I wrote the words down, that I had absolutely in the past been someone who, you know, if I knew I needed a night out, or if I knew I wanted to get high, if I knew anything, like, you call the friends that, you know, will probably do that with you. Mm-hmm. And the same goes for shopping. I just hadn't really thought of it that way because, like you said, like, it's so normal. We don't even realize it. Like, we'll talk about some store that's going out of sale or out of business, and like, everything's on sale and we got to go and see what there is. And just anything. And, oh, where'd you get your shoes from? And then you are like, oh, I got it at this store. They had this great sale. You should go check it out. Like, it's so normal. Now, I mean, with shopping specifically, yes, I'm very careful to specifically things like, I hate calling it my platform, but like, let's just say like Instagram, because I'm pretty visual. So I'm on there a lot. Like if I go and buy something, I am not going to like take pictures of it and be like, hey guys, look what I just got. Because not only because it doesn't really matter, like it doesn't really matter what I just got, but I don't want anyone to think that they need to have what I have. I've even had weird, like sometimes I'll have someone, I'll have the odd picture. I'm like hiking or like I'm out doing something and there'll be a picture and someone will be like, oh, what kind of boots are those? Or where's your jacket from?
Oh,
and
gosh.
I don't even respond. I don't respond because I'm like, I get it. I get when you like something, you might want it. But I have just this feeling of like, if you really need it, like they will come into your life. I don't need to be the person who's telling you to go and buy it. But yeah, with friends, like it actually happened just a couple weeks ago. One of my favorite bookstores actually in my hometown was closing down and all books were 50% on sale. Now I have a list of like 3 books that I had been wanting to read. So I was like, I'm just going to go in. If they have those books, I will buy it because that's already on my list of like to read right now. And that's like a list I keep. Like it's not something from the internet. It's not, you know what I mean? So I'm like, if they're there, only one of them was there. So that means that I only got the one book. But I was like, you still have that feeling of, oh, I should tell so-and-so. Oh, I should whatever. And I was like, no, because I don't need to just make people go buy things.
Yes.
Like, I don't need them to come with me. Like if I need it that bad, I can go alone. And shopping doesn't need to be this like social hangout thing we do. Anyways, what were you going to add?
No, that's a good point. I realized recently, even separate from reading this book, but when somebody will compliment me on something, I will offer that information almost as a way to say thank you. Like, oh, I like your shirt.
Thing.
Oh my word. Thank you. I got it at, you know, wherever I got
yes.
it. It's like, why did they weren't even asking that, but I was already like, here's the baton to like, go get it yourself.
Cause I feel like we assume that's what they're asking. It's just like natural. Like sometimes I'll try and stop myself and then I feel guilty. Cause I was like, oh, she probably wants to know where I got it. And then I have to like pause and then I'll like give up the information. But yes, I think the same exact thing.
Yeah. It's not even a thought. It's just a way to say thank
you.
Like instead of thank you, just like, oh, I got it here.
And I think frugality gets this bad rap for being like people who share sales and coupons and like ways to save money on a bunch of stuff. And I think we're seeing this new like wave of frugality where we're like, hey, why don't we just stop buying stuff? Why don't we just like stop telling people to buy stuff? That would be better.
Or just like being okay with the fact that, yeah, you're going to buy some things and like, that's okay. But like the world doesn't need to know about it. And we don't need to always like, yeah, share deals or yeah. Cause like you said, like it used to be so of like the sharing coupons and sharing sales and stuff. And that's being frugal. It's like, no, like we could just not talk about it. Sometimes you buy things in life and like, we don't need to talk about it. And that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. There are other ways to like get what you want or discover, you know, different ways to get it. So.
Well, cause that's the thing. I don't think we realize it. Like we talk a lot about how social media is filled with influencers, but it's really just like an extension of what we've already always been doing in regular life, which has been, we tell each other about things that we've got, like, and it's not just us or whatever. It's been since advertising's really been a thing. So if you even think, my grandma has like actually a very explicit example of just like someone in her life who really wanted to know where she got her appliances from. This is literally in like the 60s. that was like a thing, right? So like, it's not like we've never talked about this stuff before. It's just on like such a bigger scale now with so-called influencers. That I think it is important to now like sort of take multiple steps back and be like, we've always been doing this. So how can we change the conversation altogether now?
Right. To navigate the difference between keeping up with the Joneses, but genuinely helping people to get what they need at a reasonable cost. Yes. It's like that balance, that middle ground there, that we've never been good at the middle.
Yeah. Mm. It's always it's always a journey, a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So, I loved all of that. But it's time to get off of the really good stuff and get onto the even better stuff. Yes. Which I think we all know what that means.
I know what it means.
It's time for
the bill of the week.
That's right. It's time for the best minute of your entire week. Maybe a baby was born and his name is William. Maybe you paid off your mortgage. Maybe your car died and you're happy to not have to pay that bill anymore. Duck bills, Buffalo bills, Bill Clinton. This is the bill of the week.
All right, Kate, as our special guest today, we would like to invite you to give your bill of the week. What'll it be?
I have this one little trick that I do in my home that makes me feel not like rich in whatever that means to you, but just like reminds me that I have money. Money is available and adventures are available to me. Mm-hmm. And so after I've traveled somewhere, if I have any leftover bills, like paper bills from the country that I was in, yeah, I actually keep them in like random spots around my house. So that sometimes I'll just see like a 20-pound note and I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like, I'm going to go back to the UK next year. And it just like gives you this little reminder that, I don't know, like, A, I have even that 20 pounds is not a lot of money, but I have money. And that like another adventure is around the bend.
That's amazing. Yes. Yeah. You already have money in that country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's cool.
Oh.
That's a great bill. That's definitely so good.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Right now I have 2 American dollars. So that's all I've got for the day.
You
can stay in America.
Yeah, you can come here and we'll show you what you can get with $2. It's not much, but we can make an adventure with $2.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man, that's so cool. If you want to leave your bill of the week for us, just like Kate did, you can head over to frugalfriendspodcast.com/bill and leave us your favorite. We leave it very vague so that you can come up with anything. It's vague for a reason. So we are going to continue with questions from our community, because when I posted in the group that we were talking with you this week, everyone had a question and they were all really good. And I was like, should we even come up with our own questions? Because I feel like we could talk forever on these. We'll share some of them. And it'll be a kind of like a lightning round, but don't feel like you have to talk fast. All right. So the first one, Leah wants to know, in the book, you compare and contrast your physical addictions with your spending addictions. And I think she was trying to ask about the compare and contrast between working through each and working out of each. Like, what was the similarities and differences between both?
I don't even know if I know how to answer that, except that there's something I've been wanting to say that I haven't been able to say elsewhere, so maybe I'll say it now, is that something I've been thinking about is that I think for me personally, the fact that I, or not the fact, but me stopping drinking when I did, I think gave me some of the willpower to take on a big challenge like this. Because I think it was sort of the first really big thing that I did where I did have to learn a lot about myself. Like, I went through a lot of the things I talk about in this book first when I quit drinking. Like, the social stuff, absolutely. I lost friends. I had to change friendships. I had to shift my money around, like reprioritize certain things, and just start asking myself questions, and 1,000% had to learn how to feel feelings and deal with it. Now, I would still say I was numbing a little bit with spending or something like that, but I did have to learn how to feel a lot when I quit drinking. And so I don't know. I just think, like, I don't know if I have the answer exactly, except to say that the process will probably be similar for all of them, even just if it's a little different.
Yeah, I could see that being the case. That's kind of what I was like expecting to hear. Because I've seen a lot of people overcome physical addictions, and then like I have overcame like spending addictions, but they seem like both take a lot of more willpower and internal stuff than habits or like education or function.
Yeah. And that's where absolutely like the reason to talk about why friends or just having some kind of support is so important. Like the same way Emma, my best friend, was like the person for me to talk to because she always encourages me to do the good thing, is the same way if you were going through something like AA and you had to get a sponsor, or you should get a sponsor if you're going through something like that. It's not because there's anything wrong with you. It's because it's really important to have even one person in your life who can keep encouraging you to do it. Like, keep going. You're making the healthy decision. Yes, it's hard. You can absolutely get through this.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that community is helpful to form and cultivate and to find. So that's great. So to move on with questions from our community, one of our listeners, Jesse, wants to know what your favorite part of the shopping ban was, followed up with if there was anything you were most excited to buy after the ban was completed.
I don't know about favorite part. It's funny. The first thing that came to mind actually was just realizing sort of the basics about myself that I should have known. Like, I've never cared about clothes, you know, and it's such a simple thing. Everyone's would be different for that. Like, yeah. Some people absolutely love clothes and fashion. For me, it was so interesting to learn those little things about myself, be like, oh, like I've actually never cared. Like, why do I even own this stuff? I've always been someone who wears like the same 2 to 3 outfits. Mm-hmm. Like, and I could look back as far as when I was like 11 years old and say that to be true. So I'm like, right. Okay, like this is just a thing about me. Cool. Like, good to know. Mm-hmm. When the first year was over, there was honestly nothing. I thought I would have this long list of stuff. Mm-hmm. That did not happen. When the second year was over, I was planning a really big road trip around the United States, and I wanted to just buy some camping gear for that. Because that was something I'd always borrowed camping stuff from my parents, but it lasted a long time. I think the tent that we used as a family, gosh, it probably lasted like 15 plus years. But I'm like, I'm one person. I don't want to be setting up like a 5-person tent by myself.
Yeah.
So there were just a couple of things that I wanted to buy related to that.
Sure. And you knew that you'd use it. It wasn't maybe because camping sounds fun.
Yeah.
But no. Having gone through the ban, you know that, okay, this will be valuable to me. This will be useful.
Yeah. There was also during the second year, I really had thought I wanted to buy a stand-up paddleboard. Mm. And that was something all throughout the year, I was kind of looking at deals or looking at whatever and just really realized that like, it's not a priority for me. And if I really want to go paddleboarding, I can go with either friends who have them or yeah. I can rent one. I don't actually need to own it. Mm-hmm. And that's another shopping thing. I think like, and just a human thing, we feel this need to own things. Like yeah. We have to own it, but you actually don't. It's perfectly okay to rent something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to recognize how many times you'd use it. How many times would you actually use a paddleboard?
Yes. I love the idea of like having things like that as a group. So our friends have like a double kayak and we've been able to use that before. We have a paddleboard and we've been able to lend that out to our friends before. So like, I think that community capital is overlooked. Like people think I think Jill, you had mentioned this before, like everybody owns a leaf blower or a lawnmower, but like everybody mows their lawn at different times. So really there could just be one community, for the street. Yeah. And like everyone could go in on it and everyone could get their lawn mowed for less. Like that's an abstract suggestion, but yeah, that's like an option as well.
No, I don't think it's abstract. I think that's like very real. And it's not even just about saving money. I think it's also just for the environment. Mm-hmm. Like we don't all need to own these things that we barely ever use and then eventually throw away.
Yeah.
because no matter, like, something can be recycled over and over and over again, at some point it's going to end up in the landfill.
Yep.
So the health, or like the healthier for the environment thing to do, is buy less stuff.
Exactly. Love that. All right. And Emily had an amazing question that I know you'll love. So many minimalism writers and creators, including me, say to like give up stuff to find what really matters. But very few talk about how they found what matters after they gave up the stuff. And so like, I feel like you've tried to fill in this gap. But like how did you like specifically find what matters?
I mean, I'm going to say it's ongoing. It changes. It takes, you could say, soul searching or whatever. sometimes I think it means going through hard stuff. I think every time you go through something hard, you're reminded that life is really, really short. And I actually remember reading this article a few years ago, and it's pretty popular. A lot of people know about it. It's called The Five Regrets of the Dying. Mm. And the number one regret was, like, I'm paraphrasing it wrong, but like not living the life they had wanted and instead living the life others thought that they should have.
Yeah.
And I've just thought about that so much because I've always said, this is so morbid, I don't even know why I did this. In my high school yearbook, I literally wrote, like, if you're lucky, you might get 85 years on this planet. And I sort of just took that as, like, that's historically true for my family. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I just always think about that, though. And, like, the topic of dying, no one wants to talk about it. But at the end of the day, we're not going to live forever. Mm-hmm. And so I do just think about that, like, what do I want to have in these 85 years, 33 of which are already behind me, yeah, right? Like, what do I want to have? And who do I actually care about spending time with in those 85 years? And that doesn't mean turning people away, but like if you're in really toxic stuff, it helps me kind of start to push some of the toxic stuff away.
Yeah.
And be like, no, like life is really freaking short. And like, so not that I constantly remind myself of death, but just that like we're so lucky to get what little time we do have on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just like, I don't want to waste too much of it.
Yeah. I think there's so much wisdom there in that minimalism doesn't give you the answers. No. It doesn't tell you what matters, but it certainly weeds out the things that don't matter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's almost like it doesn't give you the answers, but it tells you what it's not. That what doesn't matter is buying, keeping up with everybody next to me, having my home filled with knickknacks. I at least know that much. And minimalism tells me that much and then creates this space for my own exploration.
Yes. Like my friend Brooke McCallery wrote this book called Slow. And at the beginning of it, she talks about how her journey really started, first of all, with postpartum depression, but then doing this exercise that was created by a woman named Roz Savage. And it's called the obituary exercise. And you essentially write like a 3-sentence obituary that someone might read for you or that you would want people to read for you. And I don't know, like, I just think about stuff like that. Like, again, it's not to just be like, oh, let's think about how we're dying all the time. But
sure,
this thought that, like, you only get kind of one shot at this. And if you are just trying to keep up with other people, you never stop to ask what you actually want.
Yes.
And so I think that's really, like, the shopping ban, we could say, or the browsing ban would be the better word for it, is that I stopped kind of looking at everything else I could add to my life and just started looking at, like, what do I already have? What do I already enjoy? How can I just have that? Like, I don't really need much more. How can I just have more of, like, the good stuff that's already here?
Amen.
Excellent. Yeah, great. Well, on that note, let's move to numbers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's lighten it
Chris,
up.
Yeah, right. Chris wants to know if you've always had a love for numbers and statistics, or did you just do this for the book where you kind of talked about percentage of things discarded, percentage, you know, that you think that you can complete this challenge?
Oh my gosh, so funny. So, yeah, I cannot say that I've always loved numbers. Although something that's like interesting is when I was in high school, I thought I was going to become an accountant. Mm. And because I was really good at like accounting 11 and 12 in school, but, when I took my first accounting for business course, I was almost failing it. So I just dropped out. I was also 18. And I think now if I took it, I would probably do a lot better and be more interested in it. Yeah. But at 18, that was not my thing. Yeah. So no, I don't think that I've always been interested. I do remember having this feeling when I started decluttering, just like, I could see how much I was getting rid of, but I was like, I'm just curious. Like, I'm just going to keep track of this completely out of curiosity. And so I tracked it that year. I have no idea how many things I own now. Like, none of that really matters. It was just very much like a curiosity thing.
I love it.
There's something helpful about that concrete knowledge and like what you described you did in your second year following the shopping ban. It is helpful to know and to be able to give those concrete examples of this is how much I consume. I know the impact that this had on my life. It was helpful for me too, as I followed throughout the book. It was a nice little tangible, oh, okay, I get what's happening here.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the piece to add, like the confidence I could complete this project, the reason that felt important to me was it was really just a measure of like where my emotions were at each month, because I had a very clear record of that through the blog and journaling I had done. So, I mean, that number is somewhat arbitrary, but it felt important to show that you can still go through periods where you're like, what am I doing? I am not going to be able to do this. But that you can push through them.
Yeah. I loved those little beginning of the chapter percentages. They definitely lightened it a little bit. So, and this is the last question. We left this for last on purpose. But Jennifer wants to know, not me, but another Jennifer wants to know, will you ever blog or podcast again?
Okay, so I will definitely podcast again. I'm not sure about blogging publicly. This year has been so weird. Like, weird is like the only word I can think to describe it, because it was just unexpected and up and down, and not bad, but like up and down. And yeah, the short end of that, I have no idea about blogging. Mm-hmm. But podcasting, yes. I'm hoping by January I can kind of get my stuff together for that. But it will be different than what I've done with Carrie. And I feel really excited about it.
I'm excited for it too. Podcasting is so fun. And for those who don't know, Kate just released her final blog post on kateflanders.com. So I am sad to not read any more blog posts, but you're going to be submitting a proposal for book number 2. So we'll still get to read stuff from you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, something I don't think I've really said anywhere about it is that I think one of the things I realized about blogging, especially just personal blogging, so it's not blogging as a whole, but like personal blogging, talking about your life all the time. Mm-hmm. Not only did I sort of get to this point where I'm like really sick of talking about myself. Like, I just am not that, I just don't want to talk about myself. I want to talk about other things. Like, I have ideas or thoughts or just questions that I'm like, what do you guys think? Mm-hmm. Like, and it's not, I just don't want to talk about me. But the bigger picture thing that I've been thinking about a lot this year is that I think that blogging about yourself on a weekly basis keeps you in a very short-term mindset, because I could only work on things like 1 week at a time. And so I had no time to like think bigger and like bigger picture stuff or just longer term projects, things that would take more time to do, but that would maybe just feel a bit deeper and more interesting, rather than, like I said, like just like, here's what I've been up to.
Yeah.
Right.
What are some of those bigger things that you will be working on now?
Well, even things like the podcast I want to do, I mean, I've been brainstorming it for like a year. Well, maybe not quite that long. I'm pretty sure I emailed Carrie with the idea in like February and just said like, I think I'm going to do this solo podcast where I do XYZ. And she was like, that sounds great. Like, and so I just keep talking about it and like slowly kind of working towards it. And rather than just kind of jumping in, and not because I'm like, want to do it in a perfect way. I don't think that that's possible, but just because I really want to make sure it feels like it all lines up. And right now it does. I just have to get a couple other things kind of off my plate and then I can start doing it. But bigger picture stuff is also just like books. Like, I think that there's such a lengthy process. Like, let's say if I could finish a proposal, which takes time, it takes way more time than writing a blog post. Like, writing a proposal alone is like writing a master's thesis, because it can be up to like 40 pages long. And all you're doing is talking about what a book is going to be about without writing the book at all. And so I'll work on that this fall and winter. Let's say we sell it in like February, if someone even wants it. But if someone wants it, we sell it in February. It won't come out until probably like summer or fall 2020. Like, there's such a long-term project. But yeah, I found it's something you can go deeper into than just like a 1500 word blog post. So yeah.
So excited to see what those things are and your podcast. And thank you so much for hanging out with us today.
No, thank you. These were great questions, and thank you for picking the book to be part of your book club. That's super cool.
Yeah.
It's so exciting that we got to interview you, and having just read your book, it's going to be something special for our listeners. So we appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right. We out. Jill, did today's episode get you even more excited for the Frugal Friends book club?
Duh. And next month, we're reading Your Money, Your Life by Vicky Robin and Joe Dominguez. So the fun does not have to stop here.
Doesn't.
If you want a copy that you can keep, your own very own copy, we're giving them away.
Yes.
So for every 5 reviews that we get this month, in the month of September, we will give away one copy of the book. There's no limit to that. So to enter, leave us a review on your podcast listening device, not just iTunes. Screenshot that review and send it to frugalfriendspodcast@gmail.com. We will then put you in the running and we'll select the winners for this book at the end of the day on September 30th.
Yes. And if you want to know what a really great review looks like, it looks like 5 stars. And yes. And this one is from LeslieAnn22, and she says, new fan, 5 stars. I discovered this podcast when they did an interview with Debt Free and Sunny CA, which was a great interview, and definitely go back and find that if you didn't listen to it. She paid off a lot of debt. And she has some great tips. But through an interview with Debt Free and Sunny CA, and they're great. They're very practical and down to earth and make frugal living very attainable. Thank you so much, Leslie. We appreciate you. Love it.
Thanks for your review. You guys can send us a review also. So thanks so much for hanging out with us today. You can hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening to this episode, and we will come at you every Friday in your ears, in your car, in your home, with more frugal goodness. So until next week.
Bye.
See ya.
Frugal Friends is produced, edited, and mixed by Eric Sirianni.
So wonderful.
It was good. We're getting this thing down to a science.
We are scientists.
I think so. Like, if you understand science and you get something down to a science, that makes you a scientist.
I think so. I don't even need a PhD. Those things are too expensive.
No, I think we get honorary PhDs.
Somebody should give us an honorary PhD for frugality.
What would yours be? It would be in frugality?
Yeah. What would yours
Who
be
Who would
in?
Give that? Oh.
Wait, we science? Weren't supposed to say. Oh, in science? I don't know who would give me a PhD in frugality. Dave Ramsey, probably.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. He probably would be the one.
Yeah, PhD from Financial Peace University.
Yeah. Is that something you'd hang on your wall?
Yeah, I would do that. I did get a little thing from graduating Financial Peace University, which I did not put on my wall, but that wasn't a PhD.
Mm-hmm. Is it something you list as accomplishments on your resume?
No, but I come to think about it, I think my master's degree is on the floor in the closet. So I don't know.
Mine is crumpled up in the closet. Not crumpled up, but it definitely has like a rip in it. I don't know how it happened. Clearly, I did
what,
not.
Did they print those things off at Staples? Come on. It's supposed to be like have some girth to it.
I know. Not, it's like, it's got like a, not even a slice. I don't know, like a pen went through it or something.
It's not. You haven't even been graduated that long.
No, I know. It's like probably my own rebellious form of like, yeah, I got it, but I don't care. I can live my life without it.
Take this degree. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This piece of paper doesn't define me.
This piece of paper is not my education. I throw it on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe I'll find like a $5 frame at Walmart.